College football, NFL Week 1 recap, and Derek Jeter is officially in the Hall of Fame. La Valley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the La Valley Sports Talk podcast brought to you by the Sideline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris La Valley. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. Let's kick off the pod. Let's talk some college football week 2. Huge upset in college football last weekend. Oregon upset Ohio State 35-28. Anthony Brown of Oregon, 17-35, 236 yards, 2 touchdowns. And C.J. Vertel, the running back, 20 carries, 161 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Ohio State's quarterback was 35-54, 484 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a pick. That's C.J. Stroud, by the way. And both Williams and Henderson combined for over 100 yards on the ground and 1 touchdown. So this is a huge win for Oregon. Most importantly, it's a massive win for the Pac-12 conference. This is the type of win that will help the committee pay attention to them come November. Like, these types of wins are what the Pac-12 needs if they have any hope of finally getting into the college football playoffs. And this could be a devastating loss, by the way, for Ohio State. We'll have to see how the schedule breaks for them the rest of the way. I still believe Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten. But you just don't know. You don't know how this is going to play out the remainder of the season. Iowa winning last week was also a big deal. They're in the Big Ten. So look, if Iowa goes all the way to the Big Ten championship undefeated, they play Ohio State, and Ohio State doesn't win that football game either, Ohio State's definitely out. And even if they win that football game, there's no guarantee that Iowa won't be in either. It's going to depend on their strength of schedules. This does give Clemson a little light, however, to still make the college football playoffs. I talked last week about how devastating that loss was for Clemson because the ACC is such a weak conference. And with North Carolina losing last week too, that really, really hurt Clemson. The fact that Ohio State just lost, though, definitely brings a little bit of light back in for Clemson to possibly make it to the playoffs. The other big game last week was Stanford smacking around USC 42-28, which cost head coach Helton his job, another USC coach that's been gone within like the last 10 years. That school, for a college football powerhouse, or at least historically a college football powerhouse, USC has got so many issues. Anyway, getting back to this game. Tanner McKee from Stanford, 16 of 23 for 234 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nathaniel Pete, 6 carries, 115 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. And then you had Keaton Slovis, I believe is how you say his name, from USC, the quarterback, 27-42, 223 yards, 1 touchdown, and 1 pick. So you got to give all the credit in the world to Stanford's defense, who completely shut down USC's offense. USC, coming into the season, was supposed to have this powerhouse offense. Stanford just absolutely shut that team down. USC was behind from the jump, and they were never able to recover. Now, this leaves UCLA and Oregon as the two best possibilities for the Pac-12 coming in to make the college football national playoff picture, as I just mentioned Oregon a moment ago. I was dead wrong last week, by the way, on this pod. I said Oregon was 0-1 coming into this week. I don't know why I said that. They're 2-0. Both them and UCLA are 2-0. They're the best opportunity for them to make the playoff. They're also playing each other in near the end of October. I think it's October 23rd is their game against each other. So that'll be very interesting, because the winner of that game, if they're both undefeated coming into that game, the winner of that game presumably is going to be the one and only shot for a team to make it into the college football national playoff. And I keep bringing this up because the Pac-12 has never had a team enter into the playoff picture. So this would be a massive win for the conference if they can actually have an undefeated team. Because look, if either UCLA or Oregon is undefeated and they win the Pac-12 championship, they're going to make it at this point, because you already have Ohio State with a loss and Clemson with a loss. So this is really going to start changing some things. The only guarantee at this point is that Alabama's going to get in. I mean, that's really your one guarantee, and you could possibly see a second SEC team get in too, depending on whether it's Georgia, maybe Florida. And speaking of Florida, that is the one game to watch this week, which is Alabama at Florida. I think Alabama's going to win the football game. Let's be real. I talked about Alabama last week on this pod. They're a head and shoulders above every team in football. But if Florida can keep it close, if Florida can keep this game close, and then they win the rest of the way, they're going to be in the conversation. They have a decent team. Both teams are 2-0 right now. And losing to, there's no shame in losing to Alabama, especially if you're in the SEC. So Florida could be there. Georgia could be there at the end. Alabama, we already know, is going to be there at the end. So that's why I'm saying that the college football playoff picture, and it's only week two, or we're heading into week three, rather, is it's just very interesting. It's more compelling than it's been in years past, because when you think about it, you've pretty much just penciled in Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, like I did at the beginning of the season, and I said, look, Oklahoma's probably going to be the other undefeated team. I still think Oklahoma's likely going to be there at the end. Spencer Rattler is playing really well, and Oklahoma's defense is matching their high-powered offense. So Oklahoma has a really good shot at being there too. But that still leaves two other spots. And if the Big Ten can't get their act together and the ACC can't get their act together, you got the Pac-12 right there. And then who knows, you could have another SEC team, or maybe they will slot in Iowa if Iowa can go undefeated. You know, it's just, it's much more compelling than it's been in the past. And I think that bringing it up every week and kind of just pointing out the different possibilities makes the college football season that much more exciting. But anyway, enough about college football. Let's get into NFL week one. All right, so we've got six games here that I want to unpack. Now, I'm going to do my best not to overreact. It's only week one. And I try to do this every year. It's week one. There's plenty more weeks to go. Usually the first 3 to 4 weeks, you kind of got to kind of just throw up in the air before you really start seeing what's going to happen with these teams. With that said, there were some scores and performances that were more alarming than others, at least in my opinion. So again, I'm going to do my best not to overreact. However, no promises on this one. So again, here's the six game. So let's kick it off here. So Saints blew out the Packers 38-3. To say I was shocked by this score would be the understatement of the year. Rodgers was putrid, 15 of 28, 133 yards, 2 touchdowns. He got benched in the fourth quarter. Aaron Jones, 5 carries, 9 yards. Jameis Winston, 14 of 20, 148 yards, and 5 touchdowns. There's no excuse for the way Rodgers played. Okay, there's no excuse. I know, Aaron Rodgers homer over here. I'm not going to make an excuse for it because there is none. There is no possible spin you can put on this performance. Rodgers was pathetic. He seemed disinterested. He seemed like he didn't care. And it kind of goes to show, as much as people just assume great quarterbacks like Rodgers, Mahomes, Brady, you name them, top quarterbacks in the league, think that if you think that they can just roll right into the football season without any type of practice, without any type of preparation, Aaron Rodgers' performance should show you that it just doesn't work that way. And it kind of goes to show why Brady is so damn meticulous about his training and about his preparation, or Peyton Manning was that way. You see the all-time greats. The reason why they're so insane like that is how difficult the game of football really is. And I think Rodgers' performance shows Rodgers didn't do much in the offseason aside from hanging out in Hawaii and doing his own thing. And I think his performance on Sunday shows that he was ill-prepared for the football game. He clearly didn't care, which that's a whole other issue and something that, you know, as much as I will defend Rodgers on a lot of things, a performance like that is inexcusable and it's indefensible. And it's honestly, like I said, it's pathetic. And frankly, I expected Rodgers to come in to blow out the Saints. I also wasn't, if you had told me, I actually don't know what's more of a shock, Rodgers throwing 2 interceptions or Jameis Winston throwing 5 touchdown passes. Like, I'm still trying to figure out which one is more of a shock to the system for me, because Winston looked good, which is shocking. Like, I still can't believe those words are coming out of my mouth. Jameis Winston actually looked like a competent quarterback. And I give Sean Payton credit. I mean, maybe he is the offensive or the quarterback guru that I wasn't giving him credit for, mainly because, like I said, he only went to a Super Bowl one time with Drew Brees. It's kind of hard for me to really buy into Sean Payton. But then at the same time, I'm hearing a lot of analysts talk about how Payton's one of those type of coaches who loves quarterbacks like Winston, who have arms that can throw the ball 40, 50 yards down the field. And Drew Brees over the last 4 to 5 years just didn't have that in his tool set anymore. He wasn't that type of quarterback. He couldn't throw the ball more than a few yards downfield. So I don't know. It's just that was just that game to me. There's another game too that I'll be bringing up shortly that I don't think is necessarily indicative of what we're going to see the rest of the season. Like, I still think the Packers are one of the top 3-4 teams in the NFC. I don't know about the Saints yet. Like, I'm going to have to see Jameis Winston play like this, or at least play well over the next few weeks before I buy into the Saints pure 100%. Bucks Cowboys. This was the Thursday night game, the game that kicked off the NFL season, and it was a great, great football game. Brady looked like he was 25. He was 32 of 50, 379 yards, four touchdowns, two picks. One of those interceptions was a tip ball, was not Brady's fault. Brown and Godwin both caught TDs and had over 100 receiving yards each. On the Cowboys side, Prescott was 42 of 58, 403 yards, three touchdowns and a pick. Both Cooper and Lamb caught a touchdown, or they both caught touchdowns individually, plus they each had over 100 receiving yards. So, like I said, Brady looked incredible. He looked, I don't understand how this guy keeps looking younger and younger and younger every single year. He looks great. He doesn't look like he's almost 50. He looks like he's pushing 30. It's just, it's unbelievable what this guy's been able to do. Now, to me though, the bigger story on this was the Cowboys and Prescott. Brady, I expected Brady to play well. I expected the Bucks to win. I did not expect Dak Prescott to look as strong as he did. He looked good. His shoulder looked solid. With that being said, though, I didn't like that Prescott threw the ball 58 times coming off of a shoulder injury. Like, Mike McCarthy's play calling might be the worst in the league. For a head coach, for somebody who keeps getting accolades and keeps getting opportunities, I don't understand. Like, to me, if the Cowboys struggle this year, Mike McCarthy should be fired. Like, I don't like him as a head coach. I obviously had my issues with him in Green Bay. I don't like him in Dallas. I'm not a fan of his whatsoever. And the play calling throughout that game made no sense to me. I understand that they were having a tough time running the ball because of Tampa Bay's front seven. And I understand that. But again, you have your starting quarterback, your star, who you just paid a massive contract to, coming off of a shoulder injury, and in the first game back, the first game he's played in almost a full calendar year because of his injury, you're having him throw the ball 58 times? Like, to me, that's just, it doesn't make any sense. You're not protecting your player at that point. You're just throwing him out there to the wolves, essentially. It's not like he was playing against a cupcake defense either, by the way. Tampa's one of the best defenses in the league. I don't understand the play calling. I don't understand the mentality of it. But look, Prescott looked great. If Prescott can play the way that Prescott played, or look, and it doesn't even matter about the way he played. I take that back. If he can be healthy throughout this season, the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs. This team is good. The Cowboys are good, and their defense isn't historically bad as they were last year. Like, they had some flashes of they played pretty well. Their secondary, they got some holes in their secondary. But their front seven, they shut down Tampa Bay's run. I mean, Tampa Bay didn't do anything on the ground. I mean, hence Brady had to throw the ball 50 times himself. So if Dallas can just be moderately to pretty bad on defense and not historically bad on defense, the Cowboys are going to make the playoffs because this offense is incredible, absolutely incredible. All right, let's move on here. Let's go to another NFC East team. This game was a complete shock for me as well. Eagles 32, Falcons 6. This was the other game that I was saying when I was talking about the Saints-Packers game that I don't 100% buy into the outcome of this game, meaning that I still need to watch both teams for a few more weeks before I make my final decision as to whether or not they're either contenders or they just suck. So let me start off with the positives here. So if we look at the Eagles, Hurts was 27 of 35, 264 yards, three touchdowns. He also had seven carries for 62 yards. Rookie Devontae Smith, six receptions, 71 yards, and a touchdown. Kid balled out in his rookie game. I mean, Smith was phenomenal. Matt Ryan, 21 to 35, 164 yards. So the opening drive of that game, Matt Ryan and the Falcons drove down the field. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, Matt Ryan looks good. This Falcons offense is going to be prolific. Look at the way they are just marching down the field. And then they get stopped. They don't score. I think they kicked a field goal. And then the rest of the game went to the Eagles. Like, let me just put it this way. The Eagles looked incredible. Like, the speed on offense, the play calling, was tremendous. I can't take anything away from the Eagles in this game, and it's killing me. It really is. Jalen Hurts played a flawless football game. Smith looked like a future stud at wide receiver, and the Falcons looked like hot garbage. Like the Falcons looked like, especially on defense, that secondary, the Falcons secondary is a joke. It is abysmal what they have at cornerback out there. I mean, they suck on defense. I mean, that hasn't changed from last season. So, and I picked the Falcons to make the playoffs. I thought Matt Ryan was going to be rejuvenated. He got a new head coach in there, a new offensive scheme. I was very high on the Falcons coming into this season. Now, I haven't decided whether it's some growing pains with the new head coach. They're still trying to figure things out. Maybe it'll take a couple weeks for the Falcons to really get their motor going, and then they're going to make a run. Or if they're hot garbage and they just suck and nothing has changed from last season, and all of us who have been buying into the Falcons being good this year, we're just wrong. The Eagles, I feel the same way about. Now, because look, if the Falcons just suck, then the Eagles beat up on a crappy football team, and that's just the end of it. Or if the Falcons end up being pretty good, the Eagles might actually be better than everybody thought they would be. Because I said coming into the season they wouldn't win more than 4 games. And I think that their week 2 matchup is going to determine whether this game was a fluke or a trend. And we'll get on to their week 2 matchup in a little bit. Seahawks beat my Colts 28-16. Russell Wilson, 18 and 23, 254 yards, 4 touchdowns. Lockett had 4 receptions for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. Wentz, 25 of 38, 251 yards, 2 touchdowns and a fumble. Zach Pascal, 4 receptions, 43 yards, 2 touchdowns. The Seahawks own the Colts from beginning to end of this football game. The Colts never had a shot in this game. Wilson looked like top 3 quarterback, MVP candidate. Russell Wilson does what Russell Wilson does in September. There was a joke, I think it was Bill Simmons who did it, or there was another podcast that I was listening to that calls him Mr. September. Because this is what Russell Wilson does, is he balls out in September and most of October, and then he levels out. And this has just been the story of Russell Wilson's career. Maybe this year will be different. Maybe he will continue on this trajectory and he'll win the MVP. Who knows? But at the end of the day, he played a tremendous football game. He owned the Colts defense. The secondary for the Colts was terrible. Wilson did whatever the hell he wanted out there. Now let me talk about the Colts here real quick. Wentz played okay. He played okay. He had the fumble that he lost. It didn't lose them the football game. It didn't help them win the football game. Like I said, the Seahawks were pretty much in command that entire game. Wentz made a few throws that made me feel really, really good. He also made a couple throws that I wasn't exactly a fan of. Aside from the fumble, he didn't throw a pick. He threw some decent passes. He looked relatively healthy. So that's a positive. I had said coming into this game, I was hoping the Colts were going to win this game because they have to play the Rams next week. And that if they lost this week, they're very likely going to lose week 2. They're going to start the season 0-2. They're going to start the season 0-2. I'm already predicting the Rams are going to win next week. I think the Rams are a much better football team than the Colts are. I think the Rams are the best team in football. So that is what it is. However, I still think the Colts are the best team in the AFC South. And I think given the way Tennessee played, the way Jacksonville played, I'm not buying any Houston. No one's ever going to convince me that Houston's actually good. I think the Colts are clearly the best team in the AFC South. So all things considered, the Colts could start 0-2 and still make the playoffs. And I think that they will. That offensive line, though, needs to get healthy, and it needs to get healthy fast, because it looked like a revolving door at times when they were blitzing. And when the Hawks blitzed, they were getting to Carson Wentz without a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem just aside from the fact that you're getting to the quarterback. It's a problem because I don't want to see Carson Wentz get injured. So I'm hoping that they can get healthy quick, fast, and in a hurry. Makes me a little more nervous about next week. Not because I'm not already prepared for the outcome of the loss, but because Aaron Donald is a beast and that defensive line for the Rams is a beast. And there's obviously the potential of injury for Wentz. So there is that as well. All right, moving on. Steelers shocked me, and I think they shocked a few others, by beating the Bills 23-16. Big Ben, 18 of 32, 188 yards and a touchdown. Claypool had 3 receptions for 45 yards, and he also had 35 yards rushing. Josh Allen, 30 of 51, 270 yards and a touchdown. This was the tale of two halves. The Bills were up 10-0 at halftime. Pitt outscored the Bills 23-6 in the second half. Bright side for Buffalo, their front seven is nasty. Their defensive front seven is amazing. They completely shut down the Steelers' running game. And given the outcome of this game, I'm still not concerned for the Bills. The Bills are going to be fine. I am not panicking after week one. I picked the Bills to make the Super Bowl. I still think the Bills are going to make the Super Bowl. I'm just not panicking about week one. I think a lot of this could have been, there's the hype. There's all these expectations that are now sitting on the Bills. The Bills have always been the underdog. Josh Allen has always been an underdog. Now Josh Allen is in a new position in the league. People are looking at Josh Allen, expecting greatness from Josh Allen. So a lot of expectations. There's a lot of pressure. It was week one. They faltered a little bit. I still think the Bills are going to be just fine. The Steelers, especially on defense, are better than I predicted them to be. Steelers for me were a borderline wild card team. Their defense is nasty. With that being said, though, do not sit here and tell me that Big Ben is still okay, because the guy can't throw the ball 10 yards down the field. It took him 32 attempts to get to 188 yards. 32 attempts. Look, the thing that helps the Steelers is they have an elite offensive skill set. They have receivers all over the field. They have Harris at running back. They have an elite amount of weapons for Ben to throw to, which will help Ben, but he doesn't have the arm strength that he used to have. And so that's my only cause to pause when it comes to Pittsburgh long term, is I just don't know what we're going to get from Big Ben, and they don't have a good backup. It's not like they have a backup waiting in the wings that's any good. They have Dwayne Haskins, which is worse than not having a backup at all. So I'm a little cautious about the Steelers. But big scheme of things, this game's about the Bills. The Bills getting that loss. But I'm not concerned about the Bills. The Bills will be fine. All right, let's move on to the last recap here, which is Chiefs and Browns. Chiefs beat the Browns 33-29. Mahomes, 27-36, 337 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 touchdown rushing. Hill had 11 receptions for 197 yards and 1 touchdown. Mayfield, 21-28, 321 yards, 1 interception. Chubb had 15 carries for 83 yards and 2 touchdowns. Another game of two halves here. Browns were up 22-10 at halftime. Mahomes got hot in the second half. And just like in the playoffs, Baker Mayfield came up smaller than mini-me on a final drive to win the game, and he threw a stupid, stupid interception. Browns are still a playoff team. Kansas City's offense is just absurd. Okay, so those are your quick little news and notes here. Look, Mahomes did what Mahomes was going to do. Hill was what Tyreek Hill does. He just did incredible things on the field. It just is what it is. Again, this game is about one player and one team, and that's the Browns and Baker Mayfield. The Browns blew this football game. I said last week the Browns should win this game. I picked them to get the upset. They should have won this football game. They choked. They absolutely choked it away. You're up 22-10 at halftime. All you have to do is score one more touchdown. This game's over. So all you had to do was score one more touchdown and then kick all your other field goals that you were kicking. This game's done. Done. And you couldn't do it. Baker Mayfield couldn't muster it up and get it done. That's a problem. The Browns can, I still think the Browns are a playoff team. I'm not saying the Browns won't make the playoffs. So I'm not, like, it's not doom and gloom on the season. But if your expectation is to make it to the Super Bowl or compete for a Super Bowl, I can't buy in. And I know it's only week one. Again, this is me overreacting probably. But it's very hard for me to buy in when Baker Mayfield, for the second time against the same team, chokes with the opportunity to win the football game, having a massive lead and not being able to just step on their throats and put the game away. I know it's Pat Mahomes on the other side. I know it's like playing against Tom Brady or playing against Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or whatever. You expect them to make it close. And I'm not saying that regardless of if the Browns came out after halftime on fire, the Chiefs still wouldn't have made it close. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, though, is that with an opportunity to put the game away, Mayfield couldn't do it. And with an opportunity to win the game, he still couldn't do it. So again, I'm not saying that Mayfield isn't a decent quarterback, that the Browns shouldn't sign him long-term. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying these are the type of things, though, that concern me. If I was the GM of the Browns, I would be watching him very, very cautiously the remainder of the season. Because these are the type of things, though. These are the type of games that Baker Mayfield, like I said last week, Mayfield just has to make a play. One play. He just had to throw a touchdown pass. He didn't throw a single touchdown pass in this game. That's the other thing. He didn't throw a single touchdown pass. Think about if he was Kirk Cousins or Alex Smith back in the day. Or I'm trying to come up with another like quarterback who's decent, but no one ever considers them to be great. If it was Derek Carr, people would be crushing him. Absolutely crushing them. But with Baker Mayfield now, and again, I like Baker Mayfield. But Baker Mayfield seems to be getting a pass here. And I don't know why he's getting a pass. Everyone's like, well, Baker's really matured. And he's not the same guy he was in college. Bring me back the guy from college. That's the guy I want. I want that arrogance. I want that cockiness. That's what made Baker Mayfield special. That's what made Baker Mayfield Baker Mayfield. Everyone who has been concerned about, oh, you know, Baker's got to carry himself a certain way. If that was what made Baker special, was having that moxie, having that arrogance, having that just whatever it was about him. If that's what made him special and he's now lost that in the NFL, that's a problem. That type of attitude, having that type of confidence is what can make certain players great. And if Mayfield lost that, that's a problem. And it's going to be a problem moving forward for him and for the Browns. You know, some people act differently. Like Tom Brady can be super humble or quote unquote humble in front of the media. You know he's talking trash. People talk about it all the time. Brady's on the field. He's talking trash to everybody. Brady is not a nice guy on the football field. He's a jerk. But that's okay. Aaron Rodgers, not really a nice guy, period. He's got some moxie. He feels himself. He feels himself, you know, pretty strongly. As does Brady. As I'm sure Peyton Manning did too. Again, Manning carries himself very well in front of the media. There is no doubt in my mind that Manning didn't walk out on that football field thinking he was the greatest thing in the world. Baker Mayfield needs to get back to that. He needs to go get back to that, the way that he played at Oklahoma, where he believed he was the greatest thing on earth. That's the type of confidence he needs to have, because that's the type of stuff that he needs to be thinking about in those big games, in those big moments of, I'm going to make this play because I am Baker Mayfield. Because I don't think he thinks that way anymore. And again, I'm not a sports psychologist. I'm just saying, everyone who's like, oh, well, you know, Mayfield's going to figure it out. He's so mature now. He's getting it. I don't think he's getting it. I think he's losing it, which is part of the problem. All right, other news and notes real quick here. Kyler Murray balled out against the Titans. 289 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. The Cardinals won 38-13. Even though they lost to Miami by 1, Mac Jones looked great in his debut with the Patriots. He had 281 yards and a touchdown. Mac Jones is probably going to be a lot better than I thought he was going to be. Stay tuned for that one. Matt Stafford looked real comfortable in L.A., 321 yards, 3 touchdowns. The Rams dominated the Bears. Matt Nagy, I'm predicting right now, will be fired by week 6. Joe Burrow looked healthy in his first start since his injury last season, going 20 of 27, 261 yards, and 2 touchdowns as his Bengals upset the Vikings 27-24 in overtime. Vikings are in huge trouble. Derek Carr threw for 435 yards and 2 touchdowns to help lead his team back from a 14-point deficit to beat Lamar and the Ravens in OT on Monday Night Football. It was a huge win for the Raiders. The Ravens might have a problem. That offensive line is not protecting Lamar Jackson. They have no running game. Again, week 1, it's early, but that's something you may want to pay attention to, is the Baltimore Ravens may not be the dominant playoff team that a lot of us may have thought early on, or at least early in this preseason. All right, let's move on to betting odds. It's a humbling experience to start 0-4, let me tell you. Humbling experience to be 0-4 to start this season with my picks. Hopefully this week I can do you a little bit better. All right, so let's kick it off here. 4 games to watch. Cowboys and Chargers. The Chargers are 3-point favorites against the Cowboys in Los Angeles. I'm going to take the Cowboys plus the 3. I think the Chargers still win the football game, but it's going to be close, and here's why. The majority of those fans in that stadium are not going to be Chargers fans. They're going to be Dallas fans. Like, that's the one thing. Dallas Cowboy fans love going to Los Angeles. They love traveling. The majority of those fans are not going to be Chargers fans. It's different when the Rams are there. People love rooting for the Rams. No one roots for the Chargers, regardless of whether it sucks for the Chargers to be a Chargers, to play for the Chargers, because you don't really have a home stadium anywhere in the country. So I'm going to take the Cowboys plus the three, but I'm picking the Chargers to win that football game. I think it'll be something in the range of like 28-27, 28-26, something like that. It's going to be a close game. But I like the Chargers to win that one. I just think they're the better football team. Kansas City Chiefs, Baltimore Ravens. That's your Monday night football game. The Kansas City Chiefs are 3.5-point favorites. Take the Chiefs all day long. Like I said a moment ago, I don't know what's going on with the Baltimore Ravens. They scare me right now just because that offensive line, they have no running game. Their defense is good. They have a solid defense, but nothing else about the Ravens right now gives me any type of confidence. Lamar Jackson can only do so much for them. I like the Chiefs in this game. They're, like I said, they're the favorites. They're on the road, but I have no confidence in Baltimore, so definitely take the Chiefs as the heavy favorites. And then that brings me to the Philadelphia Eagles and San Francisco 49ers. Now, the Eagles are hosting the 49ers. San Francisco's coming in on the road as a 3.5-point favorite. This is the game that I think is going to determine whether or not the Eagles are actually good. Okay, if the Eagles can keep this game close, the Eagles may actually be better than I thought they were going to be, and I think a lot of people thought they were going to be. This may not be the rebuilding year that we all thought. With that being said, I think the San Francisco 49ers are going to trounce the Eagles. So take San Francisco as the favorite over the Eagles. I know they're on the road. I know there's that whole West Coast traveling East Coast thing. It's not going to matter. San Francisco is head and shoulders a better football team than the Philadelphia Eagles. I like San Francisco all day long. And then the final one that I think people should be paying attention to is the Buffalo Bills and Miami Dolphins. So Buffalo is a 3.5-point favorite going to Miami. I like the Bills all day. I think the Bills are going to have a massive bounce back game. I still don't buy into Tua. Miami, I know Miami won that game, but the only reason why they beat the Patriots is because Harris fumbled the football on the 11-yard line. The Patriots were going to score on that drive, whether it be a field goal or a touchdown, and I just don't believe that the Dolphins were going to make a comeback and win that football game at that point. When he fumbled the football, there was like 3 minutes left of the game. I think New England was the better team on Sunday. They unfortunately made an unforced error, and that cost them. Buffalo Bills are a better football team than Miami Dolphins, and I think that they're going to have a huge bounce back victory against Miami on Sunday. So here's where the hypocrisy is going to hit an all-time high, and I cannot wait for this. The NBA has announced that they're not going to force the players to get the vaccine. Now, remember, the same blue check marks that have been attacking all of the players in the NFL who have chosen not to get the vaccine, players like Lamar Jackson and Kirk Cousins, you think they're going to go after the NBA players who aren't vaccinated? I bet you they won't, because they can't, right? You can't. How can you? How can you go after players like LeBron James, who supports this, by the way, 100% behind it, thinks that this is a good move by the NBAPA? And mind you, I think so too. I don't think anybody should be forced to get the vaccine. I just, that's been my opinion. Y'all have heard it before, whether it's been on this podcast or other podcasts. I'm 100% in agreement with the NBAPA on this one. I'm actually want to applaud Adam Silver for not mandating the vaccine. That's very non-woke of him, and I'm actually proud of him for doing that. That gives me a little bit of hope for the NBA in the future. But where this actually is going to be very, very interesting, A, is on Twitter, to see all the blue checkmark people who like to crush all the other people for not getting the vaccine, how they're not going to go after the NBA. That's number one. ESPN, by the way, is going to be fascinating to watch. Absolutely fascinating to watch them not yell at LeBron James for supporting this mandate, by the way. Number two is going to be how the players are going to be able to play in certain arenas, like in New York and California, because there's already mandates being put into place that you cannot enter into an NBA arena in New York, or at least in San Francisco, without being vaccinated. So how is the NBA going to get around allowing those players to play in those games if they're not vaccinated? That's going to be fascinating to watch and fascinating to see unfold. Really, the reason why this isn't Everything is Stupid, and it's a very, very short segment, is just the fact that I cannot wait wait to watch all the people on social media who love to just absolutely decimate everybody else in all the other leagues now not go after any of the players in the NBA, mainly because they can't go after LeBron James. Not because they can't go after LeBron James, but because they won't go after LeBron James because he is their god for whatever reason. So it's just this whole thing unfolding is going to be very interesting, and I'm going to be paying very close attention to it. But good on the NBAPA. I can't say that enough. And I can't give Adam Silver enough credit for not forcing the players to get vaccinated. It's been a long time since I've been able to give Adam Silver credit for anything, but on this one, I couldn't be happier. So good on Adam Silver. Good on the NBAPA. This is going to be a very interesting story. Stay tuned. I'll be sure to update you in the future. Derek Jeter was officially inducted into baseball immortality in Cooperstown last week. Derek Jeter, I've talked about him many times on this podcast, and this will probably be the last time that I really, really dig into what Derek Jeter meant to me as a sports fan, probably ever on here, mainly because there's really going to be no point to do it ever again. Watching his speech and listening to him, especially when he talked about the fans of New York and what they meant to him, was one of the best things you could ever feel, I think, as a sports fan, or specifically as a fan of that particular player. The fact that Jeter took the time in his speech to call out Yankee fans and to say, hey, you're the reason why I worked my ass off day in and day out, because I wanted your support, I wanted your respect. That's special. You don't hear that all the time. If you think back to a lot of Hall of Fame speeches, some people will acknowledge the fans, will say, hey, you know, thank you to the fans for, you know, for supporting me and being there for me. But Jeter, the way Jeter did it and the way he said it, and you could hear it in his voice how much it meant to him, the support that he got from all the Yankee fans out there, that it all of a sudden, it kind of sucked you in as somebody who is a Yankee fan, as someone who has been a Derek Jeter fan since I was 8 years old. Since his rookie season, I have loved that dude and thought he was the coolest guy in the room. To hear him just acknowledge, and I'm going to say us in a collective weird way, but to hear him acknowledge us, just, it hit different. It felt different. It just meant something. Jeter, for me, was my introduction to sports. He was the first athlete that I ever loved, that I ever wanted to be like. And still to this day, even though I'm never going to be a professional athlete, if you said to me, if you could be a professional athlete, who would you want to model yourself after? First, second, third, last, and always, it's going to be Derek Jeter. Love Peyton Manning. I love Steph Curry. But Derek Jeter will always be the gold standard for me. Not just because he was my first, but because he's always been that dude. That dude who came up with the hit at the right time. The guy who made the play in the field when you needed that play in the field. The person who always had the right things to say during the press conference, who carried himself with such grace and dignity, both on and off the diamond. There's something otherworldly about Jeter in this sense. There has never been another athlete who has been in such a massive market, who has carried himself in a better way, who has been never once been riddled with scandal, never once had a crossword said about him except for a few selfish, self-centered narcissists. What's up, A-Rod? No one with any type of character has ever once said a negative word about Jeter. And that's what made him so damn special. And that's what made him somebody that not only did you want to model yourself after, but if you had kids during that same time frame, you wanted your kids to watch Derek Jeter play the game and say, that's who you should strive to be. His character, the way he plays the game, the way he carries himself, that's who you should model yourself after. And I think that that is why my dad was so invested in spending time with me with baseball. It's particularly because he knew I loved Jeter. He knew how much I just couldn't get enough of this guy. And he was all I ever talked about. I would open up, if I went to bed and I missed the game or whatever it may be, I would open up the newspaper and look at the box score strictly just to see what Jeter did. I didn't care about the rest of the team. I didn't even care if the Yankees won or lost the game. I just wanted to see if Jeter got a hit, if Jeter's average continued to climb, or if as long as he was above 300, I was in a good mood. I was happy because that meant to me that Jeter was doing his job and that he was doing what he needed to do to help the team win. For me, that's what mattered. Jeter is what mattered to me. More so than the Yankee team, more so than whether or not we won the game, I wanted to see Jeter succeed because I felt like he wanted to succeed for us, for the fans. And clearly he did because he said so. But he didn't have to say it. We just kind of knew by the way he carried himself. There's something so special about Jeter that, he's one of the few athletes. And look, I know people have had their feelings about Jordan, maybe Magic Johnson, Dan Marino, Peyton, Brett Favre, whomever it may be that you grew up watching, that you maybe idolized, that you really, really loved. I'm sorry, I don't think any of them can hold the candle to Derek Jeter, not even Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is arguably the greatest athlete in the history of sports. But as far as being class personified, both on and off the field, no one can hold a candle to Jeter, in my opinion. I just think Jeter is that world class. So as I close this, this little soliloquy out here, it meant a lot to me to see Jeter get inducted. I'm gonna have to go back to Cooperstown just to go see his shrine, because to me, that he is the embodiment of why I love baseball. And not just baseball, but why I love sports as a whole. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the podcast. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. I greatly appreciate it. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. That's it. That's all I have for you this week. Be well, stay safe. I'll talk to you all again soon.